You allowed to reveal a secret. This is parsha. We learn. This week's parsha is parsha Shlach. Parsha Shlach. We learn about the sugya vayotziu dibas aretz asher toros sos es bnei Yisrael. This week's parsha learned about the Klal Yisrael. They were nichshol in bringing forth the meraglim. We might see the dibas aretz asher toru oisa el bnei Yisrael. The Meraglim felt that they had bad news to reveal about Eretz Yisrael, and they spoke Lashon Hara. Okay, there are a lot of different issues involved, obviously, in what happened with the Meraglim, but it does touch upon the sugya of if you know something that is not meant for other people to know, are you allowed to reveal this information? It's not an exact match to the parasha. It isn't, it's not. Okay, this. Let's put that aside for now. But let's talk in general, off the topic, what exactly is the prohibition of revealing a secret that you're not supposed to reveal? So the truth is, it's hard to find the pasuk. Interesting. Where can you find in the Torah a prohibition, a direct prohibition of revealing a secret to somebody? What's the pasuk, quote, chapter and verse, the source for the iser of revealing a secret? So it's hard to find the pasuk, but there is a pasuk in Mishlei. The pasuk in Mishlei says, "Hoylich Rachel Megalasoid," a person who is a peddler, he is a Megalasoid. V'neman ruach mechase davar. Okay, pasuk in Mishlei, Perik Yud Aleph, a Rachel. He is a megalasoid, but v'neman ruach, a person who is faithful, is mechase davar. He conceals, he covers a matter. Now this pasuk, it's a very powerful pasuk. The fact that the two parts of the pasuk are juxtaposed allows us to understand that a rochel, in the eyes of Chazal, is a very bad person. A rochel simply means a peddler. Person that has wares, has perfumes and medicines and little tchotchkes, and he goes from one city to the next. He goes on a tour from one city to the next, and he peddles. What happens when the rochel comes into your city? You ask him, "Nu, tell me, you've been around. Before you came to us, you were in another community. What's doing there? Do people have jobs? Are people happy? Who got engaged? Who got married? Who got divorced? Who had a baby?" People who are in business and they travel, they don't just come and travel to sell merchandise. Once they already come, they bring with them information. You know, it's interesting, you go ask the collectors, the people who come to shul to collect money, by the time they get to your shul, they've probably already been this morning at another 10 shuls. So you can ask them, what's doing in all the other shuls today? Are they wearing masks? Are they social distancing? Are people happy? They have jobs? People who do a lot of traveling have a lot of information. The person that the Chofetz Chaim, it's not the Chofetz Chaim, but the person in the Mishlei that is used to describe a Baal Lashon Hara is the Rochel, is the peddler. Because the peddler, he makes his rounds. If he's coming to us today, that means yesterday he was in this community, and the day before that community, and the day before that community. And he will bring with him all of the gossip. And a lot of the gossip that he brings with him is nobody's business. It's none of your business. And when it's none of your business, that is in the gather of a secret. So when he comes and he tells you someone else's gossip, what he's really doing is he is revealing secrets. In other words, according to most commentators, and Rashi says this explicitly, a person who reveals a secret is a Baal Lashon Hara. All of the psukim in Tanakh and Chazal that are used to describe a Baal Lashon Hara, like Selich Rachel Ba'anecha, that's a pasuk in the Torah, the other source is when a person reveals a secret, even though the secret is not necessarily harmful, that is, if it's not meant for your ears, that, according to most of the commentators, is a violation of the laws of Lashon Hara. We ordinarily think that Lashon Hara is when someone reveals damaging information. You're telling me information that about a person that I'm not only I'm not supposed to know, but now that I know this information, I will not do business with this person. I was about to do a business deal with him, and there's no reason why I should not. But because you told me that he did something not nice, that someone, whatever happened. So you know what? Because of that bad information, I will now sever my business ties with this person and cause them a financial loss. Because the information that you have revealed to me is damaging information. And the truth is, it's not really damaging. It's not halachically damaging. It's just not nice. This that is not nice is not enough of a reason, according to halacha, for me to sever my ties with him. It's not a danger. But because I know this information, I will on my own choose to sever my ties. So that is your typical example of Lashon Hara, where the information is damaging. But let's say the information is not damaging. It's even good news. But it's none of your business. So most of us would not necessarily associate revealing a secret with Lashon Hara. Because it's not ra. It's not evil. No. Kamash Malon. We have over here a pasuk in Mishlei, Hoylech Rachel Megalesoid. A person who's a Rachel, and he goes from one city to the other, and he peddles information, he is called a Megalesoid. And that is not a good thing. That is in contrast to a Neman Ruach, a person who's faithful, Mechasadavar, who conceals the matter. You know, there used to be, you don't hear about this anymore, but used to be years, you read in some of these old books, from the old timers, there were people. They had a title, just like you would say about certain people, he's a Baal Chesed, or you'd say that he's a Baal Tzedakah, he's a Talmud Chacham, he's a Yadon, he knows, he's an Askan. They would say he's a Baal Soid. This is a person that you can trust with a secret. Think about it today. How many people do you know in your life that you feel confident you can go over to them and you can tell them a secret, and you can be certain they will not reveal this information to anybody, not even their wife? How many people do you know you can say that about? I want to tell you a secret. I want you should know this. For whatever reason, someone has to know this. It's not for now. It might be nogea. It might be relevant in 30 years from now. I want you to know it, but I'm telling you, you're not allowed to tell this information to anybody. This has to be a secret. How many people do you know, can you count in your from your contact list, that you consider to be what is called a Baal Soid, a person that is capable of keeping a secret? It's very few and far in between, and maybe it's actually nobody. It used to be years ago, I don't know how long ago, there was such a thing as you could identify who here in the room is a Baal Soid, a person that can keep a secret. I remember reading about a certain story about Rav Hutner. I don't know the details. I just remember how he used the term. He called over a person. He wanted to send a message. I think it was the other way around. It was Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe wanted to send a message to Rav Yitzchok Hutner, but he was not able at that time to call him on the telephone. He was not able to write him a letter. He wanted to send a messenger, but he did not want the messenger to tell the whole world what he's about to say. And in fact, he wanted, it's like a self-destruct message. This message will self-destruct in 10 seconds. So what did he do? He called up a certain person that he knew, and he asked him, are you a Baal Soid? Are you a person that is capable of keeping a secret? And the person said to me, is, and he delivered the message, and the rest of his life he never revealed what the message was. Obviously, it was something very important, something that would be very interesting, but being that he gave him his word that he would now reveal the information, that is called a Baal Soid. And this also is a very fascinating halachic ramification. That is, it can be very practical in many different matters, but where it starts is with the dayan. The halacha is, if you go to court, and let's say a very similar, three dayanim, a simple, small claims court. You go to a court, you have a complaint against your friend, he owes you $100. You sit down in front of the Bezdin, you tell the Bezdin the story, you present your arguments, your friend presents his arguments. The Bezdin says, okay, you two go out, so we want to discuss this amongst ourselves. This is a very complicated issue. Talk about today in Corona, let's say you have a dispute between a caterer and a person who gave a deposit for a Pesach program. I gave the caterer a deposit. I was supposed to pay him $5,000. I gave him $3,000. I want my money back, or I want some of the money back. I want something back. I gave you $3,000, and I basically got nothing in return because of the whole story, the whole Corona story. So you present your arguments to the dayan, and the caterer presents his arguments. And every case is very unique. You know, we all know that you cannot compare one case to the other. And they discuss the issues. And the dayanim say to these two fellows, okay, please, both of you, step outside. We want to discuss this amongst ourselves. The two people walk outside, and the dayanim have a conversation. And lo and behold, they don't agree. Two of the dayanim feel that the caterer should give back, let's say, $2,000 of the $3,000. And the other person, the other dayan, says no. He only has to give back $500. That's it. So we have over here the dayanim, three dayanim. They're the bezdin. They're discussing this matter. The circumstances are of every single situation are totally unique, and they have a conversation. And the dayanim do not see head to head. There is a disagreement, but there are rules, and the rules are you follow the majority. And being that two of the dayanim felt that the person is obligated, the caterer is obligated to give back, let's say in this example, $2,000, that is going to be the halacha. So they call the person back inside and they say to him, sir, we here as a bezdin have listened to the story very carefully. We listened to your arguments. We listened to his arguments. We looked up everything in Shulchan Aruch. We have experience, v'chulu v'chulu. We've consulted with other dayanim as well. And we, as a bezdin, have decided that the caterer should give back to the customer $2,000. Case closed. Okay? A week goes by, 2 weeks go by, and the loser, the caterer, comes to shul, and lo and behold, guess who's in shul that day? The dayan, the judge, that really wanted to go easy on the caterer, and tell him you only had. My understanding of halacha was that you only had to give him back $500, not $2,000. But what could I do? I was outnumbered. So this dayan is tempted to say to the caterer, Shalom Aleichem. Remember 2 weeks ago you came to court. Oh, I remember. What do you think? I don't remember. I lost a lot of money that day. I remember. Don't blame me. I wasn't the bad guy. The bad guys were the other two dayanim. They're the ones who wanted you to pay $2,000. I only wanted you to pay $500. So don't have any complaints against me. If the dayan says such a thing to the caterer, he has violated multiple isurim of lashon hara. And this, it's not really lashon hara. What's the lashon hara? This is the halacha. It's being megale osoid. The bezdin, when they make a decision, it's no one's business to know who said what. They form a decision based upon the majority. Acharei rabim lahatos. It's a dirty business, the bezdin. There's always going to be a winner and a loser. And the loser's never going to be happy. It's no one's business to know exactly who said what. The defender, the plaintiff, will have to give the benefit of the doubt, which die, maybe this die, and this said in my favor. It is osur. It's a mefarish of Gemara. The Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin says that it's osur to a dayan, to be megala, after the intaro, who was the mezake and who was the mechayif. This words the Gemara. Lo yoimar ani mezake v'chaver mechayivim. Avo mo'ese, what could I do? Shechaveri rabu alai. They were the majority. And the Gemara goes on to say, this is what it says in the Pasuk in Mishlei, Hoylech Rachel Megale Soid. A person that does such a thing, that's Megale Asadi, is a Rachel. A Rachel in Chazal's eyes is a code word for a Baal Lashon Hara. This is very important. Now, by extension, you can imagine that not only do you have situations in life of a Bezdin, let's say you have parents. You have two parents. You have a child. And the child wants to go to, wants a toy. He wants to get a new bike. And the mother very much wants to buy her son a bike. And the father says, no, he doesn't deserve it. He has not behaved. He's bad in school. A, B, C, D. And the father says, we have to put our foot down. We're not going to spoil the child. We're going to put our foot down. We're not going to spoil him. We're not giving it to him. So the mother's, okay, fine. I'm going to listen to my husband. My husband, he's the boss. Okay, every marriage, of course, is different. Every marriage depends who wears the pants. But the mother listens and the child is denied the gift. So now the mother is very tempted to say to the child, my child, don't blame me. Don't have the complaints against me. I really wanted to give you your toy. What could I do? It's your father. Your father is a nasty guy. That is the Zelbazach. That's no different than two dayanim. Let's say you have a meeting. You have a meeting, a board meeting in a shul. You have dayanim. Okay, I'll tell you the ugliest type of situation. The rabbi's contract is up for renewal. And it's a private vote. It's not right for the people who have voted to terminate the rabbi's contract for it to be known to the rabbi, the people who are in the room who were part of the meeting and voted. And there were people there who voted not to renew the contract. So the people who are the friends of the rabbi, for them to reveal to the rabbi what exactly happened, this is gilui soid. Okay, this is gilui soid. Okay, a lot of times rabbis, there are board meetings and there are very important decisions. Lav dafka, termination of a contract, but just other issues. And the people, they don't want to tell them. There are no spies. I mean, you know, if people to reveal information, this is a very serious issue of Hoylech Rachel Megale Soit. It used to be in the previous generations, there were people who were, like I said, who were Neman to keep secrets. It's really an incredible thing. It really is. The ability, test yourself. It happens to all of us today. You know information. It's private information. It's not your business to tell this information to anybody. And it's very, very unfortunate. It's very, very common where people do get carried away and they reveal private information. And that is a very, very bad thing. That reveals that you're not a person. If you are not able to retain secrets, there is something fundamentally wrong with who you are. A human being, just as a human being, has an obligation, as a koyach hadibur, be careful what you say, don't say something harmful, don't insult somebody, don't cause another person grief and pain with your words, don't speak lashon hara. even if what you have to say is not in any way lashon hara, very often it's no one else's business. This is private information. Private information is not meant for public consumption. To be able to discipline yourself and control yourself, not to deny yourself the pleasure, the hana, of revealing this information to your spouse, to your children, to your friends, it's a very, very, very big nesayon. And again, we're not talking about lashon hara. We're just talking about things that it's just no one's business, not no one's business. What do you have to go tell people this information for? What do they need to know this for? The ability to retain, to hold back information is an act of integrity, is a revelation of who you are as a person, and you are, if you're able to do so, you are joining an elite group of people who are called people who are balei soid, people who are able to contain, have secrets. There are different stories in history of the Jewish people where information was passed down that is very, very fascinating, very important. Like, for example, where are the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash? We've heard these stories throughout the years. There were certain people that supposedly they were in a situation where they knew where the kelim of the Beis HaMikdash are located. Or they knew information about, let's even talk about when Mashiach will come, Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu wanted to reveal to Klal Yisrael, he asked v'agilchem esra yikreschem yachar sayamim. And then Hashem said no, the Ruach HaKodesh departed. That's also a very big topic of discussion. What exactly happened when the Ruach HaKodesh departed? Does that mean that Yaakov Avinu, he did not know anymore, he forgot? Or Yaakov Avinu took it as a sign from Shemayim that it's not Hashem's desire that his children should know this information. Yaakov Avinu knew exactly when Mashiach will come. Everything was the same, nothing changed from the moment before. And the reason why he chose now not to reveal this information was because the Ruach HaKodesh departed. When it departed, that was a sign not to do it. But so what? So good, the Ruach HaKodesh departed. I still want to tell my children. I'm excited. A parent always loves to tell a child secret information. No, I don't want it. No, Yaakov Avinu was together a Baal Soid. Okay. Now let's give some other examples. These are very relevant examples. Let's say we lived in a Jewish state. A Jewish state, make believe. Is the government allowed to wiretap the telephones? Okay, we live in America. We live in America. The understanding is, I don't know if it's true or not, but the assumption is every single thing that we say on the telephone is recorded. Okay, if you go read enough articles and you pay a close enough attention, what it appears, maybe I'm wrong, maybe there's some people over here that are very knowledgeable in these matters, it appears that everything that is said on the telephone is recorded. It is stored on, someone that I know that works for the CIA actually told this to me. Okay, it was a while ago. I shouldn't even say that. They can get in trouble for what I just told them. But everything supposedly is recorded in some massive database in Arizona or who knows where in a data center, and the government is working yom v'layla, day and night, with technology where they can listen or they can basically search for keywords or terms to retrieve telephone conversations that may be relevant to their cause. Now you'll say, well, how could they do that? The Constitution, Bill of Rights, privacy. All the Constitution, the Bill of Rights provides is that they cannot prosecute us for that information, but they will still use it for their needs. So if they want to know about what's going on in this world, they will listen to the conversation. They will be able through very advanced technology to type in some keywords and then bring up all of the conversations in the country that took place at a certain moment in time where people were talking about a certain issue. And then they will use that information to do something, but they will not be able to punish, to put in jail, to torture, to deny. Who knows? That they will not be able to do, because the Constitution protects the citizens of the United States of America from the invasion of our privacy only in regard to punishment. To punishment or penalties. But if they want the information, they have a need for the information, who cares that you think it's a private conversation? We couldn't care less. You could have all the private conversations you want. You do what you want. We'll do what we want. And the Constitution? Yeah, the Constitution just says that you're not going to go to jail. If you didn't live in America and you said something nasty that we don't like, then the next day you'll be locked up, be tortured to death, and starved to death. Here you have a Constitution, so we can't do that to you.
But tell that to General Flynn.
But we can still listen. We can still listen to your conversation. What I'm telling you now seems to be very clear. If I'm not mistaken, this is the way it is. Everything that you say today is recorded, is observed. They got it. They do with it whatever they want. We're protected. We have not heard in all these years anyone in this country prosecuted or punished because of something they said in a private conversation. Yet many crimes and many things have happened in this country because of those private conversations. It seems to be work pretty much pretty good, this system. It seems to be pretty. But let's say you're in Israel, in the Holy Land, in Eretz Yisrael, and let's say make believe that the leaders of the state were Shomrei Torah u'mitzvos, which they are not. So now they have a shaila. Are they allowed to do what they anyway do, to record every conversation? Are they allowed? Is this a geder of Hoylech Rochel Megalesoid V'nemon Ruach Mechasedova? Is the Medinas, and I guarantee you, if America records every conversation, I guarantee you, in Israel, everything you say on the telephone is recorded. Everything you say on a cell phone, telephone, you name it, there's no question about it. They are not asking she'elos. They're not coming to Rav Chaim Kanievsky and asking them, Rebbe, are we allowed to record everyone's conversation? Are we allowed to listen to all the gossip? They're not coming to ask a shaila. What would happen if they would come to ask such a shaila? What would the halacha be? And you know what the answer is? It would probably be mutter. For the state of national security, it's as long as they can guarantee to the best of their ability that they would be like what they do in America and not punish anybody, and I'd use that information to be megal that information, it probably would be mutter. And you have a lot of precedents for this. You have many stories of Gedolei Yisrael, which would read all the mail of their Talmidim. Okay, now we do know that what I'm telling you is problematic, because there is something called the Cherim Rabbeinu Gershon. Rabbeinu Gershon was not just famous for making a Cherim that a man is not allowed to marry more than one wife. He's also famous for making a takana that you're not allowed to read someone else's mail. There's a very good joke, a very funny joke, where as a Talmud in the yeshiva, the Rebbe read every single letter that came into the yeshiva. So one day, which l'chore is a violation of Cherim de Rabbeinu Gershon. So one day, a letter came in and said to the man that his wife had a baby. Okay, so those days they had koilim where you were in the dormitory. You go away. You go home for Yom Tov, and then you go away. You spend a couple of months away from your wife. So his wife was pregnant. And he went to yeshiva. And the wife sent a letter to her husband. Husband, mazel tov, I had a baby. And you're the father. Maybe you should come home and help me with the baby. So the Rebbe intercepted the mail. And he read the letter, which is a violation of Cherim Rabbeinu Gershon. So he tells the Talmud, I want to tell you some good news. Guess what? Your wife had a baby. So the Talmud knew right away that the Rebbe only knew this information because he read his mail. So the Talmud said to the Rebbe, which wife had the baby? So the Rebbe was taken aback. What do you mean, which wife? You have more than one wife? You can't have more than one wife. Cherim d'Rabbeinu Gershoim. So he says, oh, you worried about Cherim d'Rabbeinu Gershoim? It's the same Cherim d'Rabbeinu Gershoim that does not allow you to read my mail. So what are you reading my mail? Okay. So this, that, this, so what? But yet we do see, it's a very, very fascinating thing, is that we do see, there are many, many stories like this, is with the Rebbeim in the yeshiva, they would read the letters of the Talmidim. In why would they read it? In order, because since they were in the yeshiva, and the Rebbe felt that my role as you, if you are enrolled in my yeshiva, to learn, to steig, to grow in learning, part of my duty is to make sure you don't have any distractions. Now today, a distraction would be a smartphone, a telephone, a toy, internet, who knows what. In those days, a distraction was a letter. If you would get a letter and the letter would say, who knows what's going on, it would be a very big distraction. And maybe the letter would tell you to leave the yeshiva. So the Rebbeim would read all of the mail. You should know this goes on today also. I know firsthand of a yeshiva out of town in the high school where the school, they literally read and check every single thing that comes into the dormitory. They read the mail, they open up the packages. That's the policy. And if you don't want this, even though it's the 21st century, then don't send your kid to this yeshiva. Don't send him here. This is a prison. This yeshiva is for certain types of boys who need to be locked up because the parents feel that these kids are a danger to society or society is a danger to them. And believe it or not, there are people in this country, there are religious Jews in this country that send their children to schools out of town where that's the policy. And the parents sign the dotted line. That's the way it goes. Now, back
in... That's called a boot yeshiva?
A boot camp? A boot yeshiva? Do they do this in the army? I don't know if it was in the army. I know, I did hear recently... this was very interesting. This is very, very fascinating. Everyone knows that Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb passed away about 2 weeks ago. So there was a memorial tribute... 2 days after his patira, after the levaya, and one of his grandsons spoke. Rabbi Dr. Norman has a grandson that was in the Marines. Okay, he's now a policeman. He was in the Marines. A grandson, a very nice young man, and he spoke. He spoke at this tribute, at this memorial, and he said that he was in the Marines. And he said that his father, not his grandfather, his father sent him a postcard. And his father was a joker. So joke around with him, a postcard. And he said, oh, how you doing? Everything is okay. And next time you have some time, come up to Washington and I'll arrange. We can have dinner with the president. With the president and the first lady. And he said that the policy in the Marines in South Carolina, where he was stationed in training, in basic training, was if a trainee, if one of the students, cadet, whatever they call them, gets a postcard at lunch in the mess hall, they read publicly everyone's postcard over the PA system. So this postcard came, addressed to this lamb boy, and the person in charge, as they do for lunch entertainment every single day in the mess hall, is they publicly read every single postcard. Why? Listen, this is the government. The government can do whatever you want. Who cares, right? I guess the feeling is that if someone wrote something on a postcard, it's public knowledge, right? A postcard, in the back of the postcard, you can read it. There's nothing holding you back from reading what it says in the back of the postcard. So by Goyim, by a Jew, maybe you have some sensitivity. It's none of your business. But by a guy, it's not sealed, it's opened. So at lunch, in front of hundreds of soldiers, they read his postcard. Whatever his name is, next time you have time off, come up to Washington and I'll take you. We'll go and we'll have dinner with the president and the first lady. So after he did this, he read this, the commander called him over after lunch and said to him, is this really true? Your father has access to the president and you have dinner with the president? Is this really true? So there in the Levi says, no, it's not true. My father was just joking, but my grandfather, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, maybe yes, it is true. He may indeed have access to meet with the president. He's a different level. So that's what he said. But in that speech, it was very revealing to me that here in the Marines, if you get a postcard in the mail for entertainment during lunch, the commander of the facility takes all the postcards and he publicly reads them in front of everybody. Is that halakhically correct? Are you allowed to do that? If you write a postcard, even though it's taka true that the postcard theoretically is open, it's still not ethical for someone to come along and read what it says in the postcard. You don't do such a thing in Yadis. That's not the proper thing. However, there is an understanding that if you're in a certain type of setting and environment where you have authority to protect your people, you are not only allowed to read the postcard, you're allowed even to open up the mail and see what it says. If you are in a yeshiva and your Rebbe is in charge of making sure that you do not have any distractions and you are achieving the goal that you're here for, that appears, according to many poskim, to give the Rebbe the legitimate authority, a halachic authority, to open up your mail and read the mail. How many stories have we heard about even Gedolei Yisrael who was Rebbeim, they read the mail, and they never told them their parents died. Even though by not telling them the parents died, then the parent is, no one is saying Kaddish for a parent. Now you have these type of stories. Someone's father died. So there's no one saying...
Rudiment was the altar from the
Slobodka. He read the mail there. But no one's going to say Kaddish. So
he said, he held that Rav Ruderman's learning
is more important. Exactly. Exactly.
A big role of Asmada, and he waited for a couple of months to tell.
Exactly. That was very commonly used during Corona to tell people, listen, just because you're not going to shul, you're not saying Kaddish, so you're not saying Kaddish. Just because you're home, you're not going, you're not davening. People, they were set shiva. They didn't have even 1 minion. Could you imagine? Not even 1 minion. Forget about Kaddish. They didn't daven with 1 minion, the entire shiva. So they were very distraught. So these stories were floating around. So you don't have 1 minion. So you don't have Kaddish. Doing what you're supposed to do, this is the biggest chos. Right now is a matzah of sakana. V'neshmartem me'oid l'nafshoy seichem. Don't get sick. Don't let someone else get sick. This is also a mitzvah. So the mitzvah v'neshmartem me'oid l'nafshoy seichem, this will be the zechus for the nifter. It's not so far-fetched to appreciate this. So just like that is definitely true when it comes to Rebbe and Yeshiva, it's not so far-fetched that this system in government, could you imagine such a thing? The Israeli government, they're not a democracy. Israel is a socialist society. The government, there's no constitution in the state of Israel. It's a military country. They can do whatever they want. You don't have rights in Israel. I don't think anyone there has any rights. There's no constitution. There's no bill of rights. They can do whatever they want to you. So there's no doubt they openly do racial profiling. They're not embarrassed to admit that they do racial profiling. They're not politically correct. They do what they need to do. They live in a very dangerous neighborhood. And you can be certain, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that everything that you say on the telephone is recorded. It's pashut. It's just too simple. We don't care because what are we saying anyway then that's so important, it's going to make a big difference. But if they were to come make believe the state was a Jewish, was a religious, halachic state, which it is definitely not, for good reason. And many Gedolei Yisrael do not want it to be a halachic state. It will be a nightmare if it was a halachic state. But if it was a halachic state, and they would come to Gedolei Yisrael and ask him a shaila, Rabbanim, everything that we do in the Medina has to be according to the halacha. Halacha, are we allowed to record everyone's private conversation? What would the Rabbanim say? It's very likely the Rabbanim would say that it's mutter. It's definitely mutter. Just make sure you don't abuse it. Like the United States in certain ways is better, because the United States, they have laws in place which prevent the government from abusing the privilege of having access to private information. In Israel, there are no laws that prevent them from abusing that information. We saw this now with Corona. With Corona, basically, they weren't embarrassed. There was a whole big commotion about this. If you have been diagnosed, you go in for a laboratory, you go into an urgent care center, and they take the swab and they stick it up your nose, and they call you back in 6 hours, and they say, "Congratulations, you have Corona." Right? Mazel tov, you have Corona. So what's the next thing that the government does? They press a button and the computer watches your every move. You're not going to go walk around without a smartphone. Everyone has a smartphone. You have a telephone, you have a smartphone. And if you don't have a smartphone, don't worry. They'll have another way to track you. They press a button and they watch your every move. And you walk out of your house. 2 minutes later, a team comes in a black uniform and a squad car outside. And they take you and they lock you up and they take you down to a hotel in Eilat. You're a danger to society. They're monitoring your every move, right? You know, oh, I have a Bill of Rights? What Bill of Rights? This is Israel. This isn't America. You don't have any rights. You don't have any rights. We do whatever we want. We have access to private information. We'll do whatever we want. Is the government allowed to do that in a halachic state? And the answer, l'chor, is yes. The answer is yes. Gilui soid is not lashon hara. Gilui soid is abuse. According to halacha, you see very clearly that lashon hara, there's a very big difference between lashon hara and gilui soid. Lashon hara is damaging information. It's damaging. Information that you know, because you know this information, you're going to act. You're going to do things that are going to cause harm to somebody else. Gilui soid is not, it's not damaging information. It's private information. It's not damaging. However, it's no one's business. As long as a person is trusted, or there is a system in place where there is trust, where this will not be abused, then it's permitted. It's a different set of rules. Lashon hara is categorically aser. Secrets are not categorically aser. It's aser to abuse secrets. So Rabbanim, Rosh Yeshivas, they're allowed to know about secrets. And they are obligated to keep those secrets covered. Look at the words of the Pasuk. The Yisod of the Pasuk is, Hoylech Rachel Megale Soit. V'nemon ruach mechaseh davar. The words of the Pasuk in Mishle are very, very precise. A nemon ruach keeps it covered. Mechaseh davar. Keeps the matter under wraps. It doesn't say that when it comes to Lashon Hara, you're not allowed to believe Lashon Hara. It's not a matter of being mechaseh the Lashon Hara. It's a matter of shredding it, destroying it, obliterating it. It's not allowed. It's not allowed to be exposed. Now, of course, I know there are certain rules of lashon hara which you have to be chayish. Okay, if someone tells you this guy's a predator, this guy's a child abuser, this guy is this guy is that, so then that's a different story. That's a story where you're not allowed to believe it, which is very hard not to do. but you are obligated to take precautions. You take precautions. This person, don't leave him alone in a room with a child. But no, I don't believe he would do something like that. That's very, very delicate. But where the information that you know is not dangerous, it's not dangerous, but it is damaging. It is damaging. You have to construct all these complicated cases. Then you have an obligation to seek and destroy this information. Gilui sod, secrets, where the information is not damaging at all. It's just no one's business. It's none of your business. Then the issues are very different. A government or a Rebbe is allowed to know of this information when necessary, but has a duty to set up safeguards to protect that this information should not be released to the wrong people. Now, along these lines, it was interesting. There used to be a thing, you find a letter in the street, and you find a letter, there used to be such a thing, I never saw it, but you would write on a letter, Pagin Diragma. Did anyone ever see such a thing? On the outside of a letter, it says the words Pagin Diragma. What does that stand for? It's an acronym. It stands for Poiretz Geder Yishochenu Nochosh. Nidui Cherem Shamta. Okay, so the pay stands for the stay of Pagin. It's Poiretz Geder. Someone who breaks open a fence, which in this case means he reveals a secret. Yishochenu Nochosh. May he be cursed. And may he be bitten by a snake. And then it goes on. Then the next letters are, he should be subject to a nidui, a cherem, and a shamta. Okay, I'm not sure exactly how we get the cherem. Okay, I'm not really sure how we get the rag. I don't know how the ragma comes into this. I don't know, but at least pagan, at least the word pagan. What happens if you go into the street and you find on the street a letter, and it was thrown in the garbage? It happens all the time. You got into the street and in the garbage, there are private documents. Now, anything that is here's the issue. Anything that is private usually has two partners. It's private, meaning from my perspective, I'm the recipient, and it's private from the perspective of the sender. Just because I am Moichel, I forgive, I don't care anymore. To me, it's not a big deal. The whole world can know the secret. Who gives me the right, though, to let the world, the other part, the person who transmitted the secret, who says they're allowed to reveal? Who says you're allowed to be moichel? You're allowed to be moichel on their secret? I'll tell you a story I just saw recently on an Erev Shabbos. It's an interesting story from the Chofetz Chaim. It's a fascinating story. The Chofetz Chaim, a person went to the Chofetz Chaim. This comes from a sefer. All the stories in the sefer are very, very reliable stories. A person comes to the Chofetz Chaim and he tells the Chofetz Chaim, I've been diagnosed with a terminal illness. I have very little time left in this world. I'm very distraught. What should I do? What should I do? I don't want to die. I'm being diagnosed. I'm going to die very soon. So the Chofetz Chaim said to him, I'll tell you what to do. But I want you to keep it a secret. I want you to keep this a very big secret. Can you keep a secret? Are you a Baal Soid? And he said, yes. I want you to go to travel to this person in this town, and I want you to ask him for a bracha. I want you to ask him, tell him that I sent you. I want you to ask him for a bracha. He should daven for you. And maybe things will be okay. Fellow listened. He went to the person. He davened. He told him. The person gave him a very sincere bracha. Comes back home. Shortly thereafter, miraculously, he recovered. Miraculously. It was a pella. No one could understand how he could have recovered. All right. 20 years pass. He never said, the Chofetz Chaim said to him, don't tell anybody. This is how the story goes. I didn't make up the story. I'm reading you a story. Whether you believe it or not, that's up to you. But there's a lot to learn from this story. Chofetz Chaim said, don't tell this to anybody. 20 years passed. There was someone else close to him that was diagnosed with exactly the same disease. And he was, again, very distraught. And by that time, the person who gave the bracha, so he thought, I'll go back to that person. That person gave me a bracha to heal me when I had this disease. I'll go to him that he should heal my friend, whoever it was, my family member from the disease. But that person already died. The person who gave the bracha died. So he can't give the bracha. But the Chofetz Chaim was still living. He was still alive. So this fellow was very distraught, because he thought the only solution would be to go again, Nochamol, to get a bracha from that person that the Chofetz Chaim told him to go to. But that person is not living. It drove him mad. And he told over the story to his wife. And he was not supposed to do that. The Chofetz Chaim told him, don't tell, he warned him very carefully, I'm telling you what to do. Go to this person, ask him for a bracha, but don't tell anyone I told you. 20 years later, someone else was sick. He wanted to go again on his own, but that person died. He went meshuga. And he told his wife the story. This is how the story goes now. All of a sudden, he got sick again. He got sick again with the same disease he had 20 years ago. So now two people were sick. Right, his friend was sick and he was sick again. He was really distraught now. So he runs back to the Chofetz Chaim. It seems like the Chofetz Chaim was very, very old and he was very far away. He made a very great effort to go back to the Chofetz Chaim. And the Chofetz Chaim, he told the Chofetz Chaim remembered him, remembered everything. The Chofetz Chaim said to him, I told you not to reveal the secret. Let me explain to you. When you came to me 20 years ago and you were sick, I fasted for you for 40 days. In other words, this fellow who I told you to go get a bracha was a decoy. I, the Chofetz Chaim, you came to me, I saw what was going on. I was mekabel on myself to daven for you for 40 days. And I was mispalel 40 days. I fasted 40 days for you. And I down for you. And that's really why he had a refuah shleima. The other guy that he sent him to was just a cover-up. You'll think in your head, you'll go to him, you'll get a bracha, and you don't know that I'm davening for you. You'll get a bracha from him. You'll think, oh, it was his bracha that saved you. But it was supposed to be a cover-up. Now, you come back to me after all these years. You were Megala the Soy. I told you not to do this. I told you not to tell anyone. And you have to read into the story why the Chofetz Chaim was upset now that he was Megala. But at the end of the story, the Chofetz Chaim said to him, I'm very old and weak. I can't do it again. I don't have the koyach to do for you now what I did for you 20 years ago. I'm a very old man. Nothing I can do anymore. I'm sorry. So what do you take out of the story? You take out of the story is, if a person entrusts you with a secret, it's for a reason. And the harm done, we don't even know the harm. We think a big deal in Galassai. Is a very great, serious repercussions, ramifications, consequences that come out of the megalis soides that are not meant to be revealed. All right, there's a lot of different things about. So the point always, if you find, if you find a letter, just because you may not be makbid on revealing the secret, does not mean that the other partner in this secret, Who says they're not makbid? You have no right to be moichel on someone else. Maybe for you it's no longer. Many secrets are two-way secrets. I don't want to reveal information about someone else, and someone else doesn't want to reveal information about me. There are many partners in the secret. Just because very often you may feel that your portion of the secret is no longer relevant, it's no longer important, does not necessarily mean that the other party, they feel now the information can be released. In government,
if somebody puts something in the garbage, the business
letter, exactly the point, right? No, you're not allowed to read it. You're not allowed to read it because the person who threw it in the garbage, they do not care. How do you know that the business who this secret relates to, they don't care?
That's how business got ruined. People should check somebody's garbage.
Exactly. Just because you don't care. I don't care. By me, I don't care. I don't care. But maybe the person, the other partner in this secret, they do care. So just because you find something in the garbage, which means that the person put it in the garbage, and the person made a statement, I don't care, very good, you don't care. But maybe he was in violation violating the loyalty, the trust of the other party of the secret who does care.
There's a whole business. There's a whole industry that's on this. The shredding business.
Exactly. Shredding, right. Because you have to take into consideration, it's not just you, it's the other party as well. Okay, to leave off is, this is a very interesting concept, and it also goes back to the halachic state. In the United States of America, there are certain rules that there's a whole system of classification. There are many things that happen in government which are classified. Okay, and there are many different layers of classification. Who has rights? What a security clearance you need to read to know about secrets of the state. They talk about this when Trump became president, he gave the highest level of security clearance to his daughter, Ivanka, and to his children, and to this one, to that one, and it was an outrage. Outrage. Just because they're your children doesn't mean they have a right to know state secrets. There are certain protocols in government. Who says even you, the president, should know about all the secrets of this country? Okay, there's a very complicated system in this country as classifying information. But most of the things that are indeed classified, you have to go look up all the laws, by default, after a number of years, 50 years, 70 years, by default, become unclassified. Unless the sitting president at that time decides to reclassify it for another period of time. But by default, when a stamp is put on a document classified, by default, every stamp has an expiration date. This something that happened today, and this is a state secret. They stamp it, classified, automatically, the date that is classified, and 70 years from now, it's declassified. It's the whole world is allowed to know this information. Unless, in 70 years from now, whoever is the sitting president will make a decision, no, we want to reclassify it. What does halacha say about that? If we were living in a halachic state, and they come to the Rabbanim, the Gedolim, they come to the Sanhedrin, they say, here we are, the state of Israel has secrets. There's private information that's no one's business. And we classify it. We put a stamp of classification. Is there such a thing that automatically, after 70 years, it's declassified? Is there such a halachic principle? L'chaira not. No such thing. Why should there be such a thing? A secret is a secret forever. If you want now to undo a secret, that will take a whole bezdin to say, okay, this thing that we have classified, we consider to be very important, now we deem it to be not so important, and now we can declassify it. This system in government that automatically a secret becomes declassified is a very strange principle. Where do you have a halachic precedent to do such a thing like that? If something is a secret, it's meant to be a secret forever. Nothing changes. It's a bizarre principle that was that entered into our mind and into the government, that there should be such a principle where, after 70 years, we can know all the lashon hara. We can know all the, a lot of it's dirt. A lot of it is like just like mamish garbage. All these nasty things. It's, at the time, it was a very dignified world, right? So you don't want to know what the president does behind. You don't want to know that the president really has more than one wife. You don't want to know that. You want to know what the president he eats, what he eats for dinner. It's no one's business. Oh, but 70 years later, now we can learn all the lashon hara. And it's, why? Because he's dead. He's dead. His wife is dead. His children are dead. So what? They're dead. Who cares? They're dead. So what? None of your business. None of your business. You had in the Gemara and Daf Yomi not that long ago is who is the Mekoshesh? Who is the Mekoshesh? Shabbi Akiva says, the Mekoshesh was Salafchad. The Gemara says, Akiva, Asid Litenes Adin, Manavshach. If you're wrong, you don't know that Torah. If you're wrong, the Torah was mechase, then you spoke lashon hara, you said lies, you emote shamer on an innocent man. The mekoshesh, tzlofchad was not the mekoshesh. And if you're right, what business do you have revealing this information? Oh, excuse me, in the United States, every document that's classified is automatically expires after 70 years. So it's been now 3,000-4,000 years. We can title to open up the files. Who was the Mekoshesh? Who was the Mekoshesh? It's been more than 70 years from the time of Rabbi Akiva. And yet the Gemara says, Binyam ben Yefes says, Akiva, Osid Litenes Adin. You're in a lot of trouble. Classified, it's none of our business. Uh-oh, I lost you over here. You still hear me? Hello, you still hear me? Do you still hear me, Rabbi Sai? I lost you? You hear me? Okay. I don't know where you hear me because my screen went out. All right, so this is the deal. These are some of the basic yisoides of Megalus. Right? It's a very, very fascinating topic. And where is it probably the most relevant? It's the most relevant in Shidduchim. Because in Shidduchim, when there's information that needs to be discussed for Shidduchim, I'm trying to get my screen back on. I just lost power. Here it is. Okay, now I see what happened. All right, we'll see what happens here. Okay, in Shidduchim is where it's the most relevant. People have secrets, and some of the secrets can be damaging, some cannot be damaging. Most of them are not damaging, but if people know, then no, they're not interested. After the fact, it wouldn't bother them one bit, but in advance, it can cause... It's a very complicated topic, but at least we try to touch upon some of the Ishke. We'll take a very short break for one minute until I get my computer back on. And then I want to start a topic which I want to spend a lot more time on tomorrow. B'li Neder. We'll see. If not tomorrow, then another time. I want to talk about the Aseres HaShvatim. I have a new Sefer that has a lot of fascinating information about the topic of the Aseres HaShvatim. So we'll be back in 60 seconds.